1, 2. We are live, man. We're back. GYGB War Report Show. Your man, Roberto Flack. The illustrious Coltrane. What is goody? Yes, sir. Yo, back we got fights, man. We got fights. Got Showtime is back.
We got fights, fake fans, and, you know, right. All types of crazy stuff going on. But, man, I don't know what you wanted to get into first.
I think before we got on, we got several things to discuss, but I mean, I think we have to set up the show right. I mean, I'm the Florida chapter, obviously,
no doubt.
The GYGB crew is comprised mainly in the wonderful city of Philadelphia. So unfortunately lost a big figure. Obviously in Philadelphia's world of boxing, but in general, you know, when you think of high level trainers and you think of trainers that have trained world champions and we can go down the list, man, but we unfortunately had the passing of brother Nassim Richardson last week. And, you know, none of us, I mean, at least myself, I wasn't aware of any illnesses that he had. I mean, obviously he was sick. But it was a major blow to the boxing world, but obviously, particularly in Philadelphia, man. And you know, I'll let you take over from here. So, you know, go ahead.
So yeah, no, well put, my dude. And the thing about it is that, you know, Nassim Richardson was such a staple in the boxing game. Period. You know, obviously what he meant to the city of Philadelphia. Just a quick, real quick backstory for people that might not know. When first time I heard about him was early 90s, you know, the Philadelphia Daily News did an article on his sons, Rocky Tiger Richardson. And they were about 12, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old at the time, tops 12. And it was this big deal because they were cut up like grown men, these little kids, and they could do all these push-ups and sit-ups. Like, he was training them like it was a boot camp type deal, like Navy SEALs. You know, people wasn't just used to seeing kids train and look like this. So the Daily News did this article, you know, on Rock and Tiger, and at that time they were making headways in the amateur ranks. Rock or Tiger end up going pro and signed on the Golden Boy. Can't remember which one. One of them just stopped boxing, you know, completely. But, you know, Nassim, because of what he did with his sons, and not to mention his handprints and his input in the amateur program collectively together. You listen to guys like Terrence Crawford, Gary Russell Jr., they all have a story to tell about, you know, either being a part of a camp that he was in, or, you know, him being around, just always being, you know, within the fabric of boxing this whole time, you know, before people even knew him as Swim Not Get Wet. You know, in fact, Carl Dargan, Dynamite, Philadelphia fighter, which is his nephew, he came up under Nassim Richardson as well. But prior to, like I said, his sons was first and foremost who, and I'm sure it was people before that, but this is what kind of got him on the map nationally. And it was interesting because I read something from Evander Holyfield, because you forget, like, boxing is a fraternity, it's a family. And, you know, Holyfield was actually the first person to post something about it and, you know, kind of touched on it and spoke how, you know, he was a good friend of his and, you know, he learned things from him. And this guy, you know, eat, sleep, drink, box, and he was just a good man, completely different. You know, they don't make men like that anymore. And I know people always got good things to say about people that's dead, but, you know, you heard this before, you know, we lost him, unfortunately, a week or two ago. You always heard people, you know, big him up and talk about how they learned certain things from him. You know, he was just one of these guys that you can tell the story about boxing without mentioning this particular brother, because, like I said, his input was so impactful. and it might not be to the level of like a Manny Stewart, you know, another guy that we lost that was, you know, a part of the fabric, but he's one of these, just these pages that is in the history books that you got to acknowledge when you go back. But yeah, people can, I don't know if you can Google old Daily News article, maybe you can, maybe you can't, you know, because there wasn't no Google back then, but I'm hoping that they printed that article somewhere because it's very intriguing to see what he was doing with his sons. I mean, now that stuff is normal now, but you know, back then when he was doing this with Rock and Tiger, I mean, it was phenomenal. And I think that kind of opened the floodgates to where he's at now. And obviously Bernard, you know, helped bring him along, and he's always been in Bernard camp. In fact, people forget he was the one that checked Trinidad raps before it was him that checked Trinidad raps prior to the Margarito situation. So, I mean, you can't, like I said, you can't even tell the Kodo story without mentioning Nassim Richardson, because if he doesn't catch the raps, Kodo doesn't get his revenge. The first one doesn't have an asterisk next to it. And who knows if Shane even beat Margarito. Not saying that he wouldn't, because I thought they had a perfect game plan, but them raps was a huge deal. And it was Nassim that discovered these raps. So, you know, props to the OG, and, you know, may he rest well. And, you know, we did do an interview with him years ago. Shout out to BJ Murray, who used to be down with the team. Was, you know, he's still down with the team. He just went to go on to do other things. But BJ went down, I forget what gym he was at, maybe it was James Shuler gym here in Philly. But, you know, we got all that stuff on footage, and, you know, we lost the real one, you know. And, you know, hopefully his legacy lives on, what he was trying to accomplish. And, you know, we're just going to continue to pay homage to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you well put, man. Well put. I mean, for you guys, if you haven't seen the interview, it was like almost 10 years ago, right? Like, it was before the Cotto Pacquiao fight, man.
Yeah, because BJ was like a, shout out to BJ Murray. He was like a kid, you know, back then. You know, he was like a young kid trying to get into the boxing journalism business. And,
wow, man. Yeah, you know, he did a good job there. If you guys haven't seen the interview, just go onto the page. Hit videos, and it's one of the first ones that GYGB put out, man. One of the very, yeah, very early ones, man.
Very early. Before, yeah, YouTube flagged videos with our music.
Right, right. That's right.
Which messed up. Because, you know, this is a perfect transition.
Word.
You know,
yeah.
We here on Guard Your Girl Boxing, we're music kids. Like, we... In fact, man, like, it's equally passion. Our passion is equal. It's equal footing. Mm-hmm. Our passion to boxing as it is to music, especially hip hop. Well, we're music kids, period. Like, we like all genres of music, but hip hop is in our DNA.
Right.
I think it's a perfect segue to get into where we need to address about something that happened 25 years ago.
Absolutely, man. I mean, listen, if you are 30 years old, and then again, man, like, I'm not bashful about my age, man. It is what it is, but
it is what it is.
We're 90s kids, man. We came up during the 90s, and we're not people we're not people that are constantly, you know, downplaying the new stuff or whatever, but, you know, we were very privileged to witness some historic albums.
Story
in those times, and one in particular that, you know, we're going to talk about real quick, man, turned 25 years old. So was it Sunday? Yeah, Saturday,
August 1st.
And if you don't know, if you are a hip hop head, okay, really, I mean, I'll just say 30, but like, even a little younger than that, but there's an album by the name of Only Built for Cuban Links that I consider a pillar,
right,
in hip-hop. And what I mean by that is there's just certain albums that transcend time and when they came out, you know?
No doubt.
And that, without question, is one of them, man. And, you know, to the point where the actual product itself was part of the marketing of the album, and in a way, well, not in a way, but it is almost referred to as, you know, the purple tape more so than people calling it Cuban links. You know, it's it was part of the shtick of I think what ended up becoming, you know, the lore of that album, man. Boy, listen, I mean, we talk about some of the greatest albums in hip hop history, and we parade the 90s a lot, but that is an album that I think for all of us, man, collectively, when you just from top to bottom, and we had this, remember we're in the chats, we were talking about like what we ROD had mentioned, like what if you had to pick one CD or one album to head on the road for, you only could pick one between, what was it, The Infamous or Cuban Link?
It was Infamous and Cuban.
Yeah, man, like how. I mean, for me, it's, see, for me, I'll say this, mm-hmm. and I'll pass it to you. The thing with that album, and I guess for me, it's just the summer of 95 to this day, man, was the best summer of my life. I remember everything about that summer, everything. Facts. And that album, man, facts, was the cornerstone of that album. And mind you, man, it came out in August, but this dates us, man. Okay. But This is in the time where maxi singles were first coming out and you were getting prepped for an album to come out. So I told the story about how me and my man, one of my best friends, that Mark, who's in Spain right now, we, just like y'all, man, we were at that point in 95, we're Wu-Tang heads. Like, I mean, we're hip-hop heads in general.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang just, it just exploded, man. And it was just, Meth came, I mean, the album came out, the first album. Then Meth came out. Then ODB came out. And we saw a trend, you know, we saw a trend of, oh, well, you know, they're all coming out with solo albums. And I know you remember the back of the Source, they used to have the hot tape of records that were coming out, right?
Yeah.
So there was two songs on there. Now, we knew at that point, Glaciers of Ice, the video came out. We're like, all right. Mm-hmm. There was two songs that were in the back of that Source magazine. And they told you the name of the song and who was on it. Those two songs were Criminology and Verbal Intercourse that featured Nas. Now, again, none of us have heard this yet. All we've heard is Glaciers of Ice.
Right.
We go, me and my man, this is June 95. Me and my man go to the now defunct Specs Music. And we go there. The maxi single had Glaciers of Ice on the A side. Mm-hmm. And the B side was Criminology. Now, that was the record we were trying to listen to because we already heard Glaciers of Ice on the Clue tape.
On the radio, yeah.
So to backtrack a little bit, me and my man Mark were big Scarface heads, okay? Mm-hmm. In seventh grade, okay, before the explosion of the samples and, you know, people wanting to be mafioso. We were, and mind you, man, like, you know, don't judge our parents. It was a different time.
It was totally different time.
At an early age. So me and my man used to joke, like we would say little excerpts from the movie and the whole nine. So, you know, we love Scarface. So we go get the maxi single. We go to my first car, 1980 Mustang. No bass, straight treble. We didn't care, man. We were ready. We popped that tape in. And the first thing we put in was Criminology because we already heard Glaciers of Ice. And when I tell you, when I first heard beginning of the record, I told you a long time, yo, we lost it, yo.
It's crazy, right?
Then, we lost it. And that really set the tone for that album because later, 2 months later or a month and a half later, the album comes out. And I mean, where do I start, man? I mean, this could be a whole show, but
yeah,
it's just,
I was afraid of that.
Yeah, like this album, I feel like, like I said, there's certain albums, and even beyond hip-hop, but like, you know, obviously we're talking about hip-hop now, but there's certain hip-hop albums, and not many are. And there's a lot of dope albums from the 90s, but not every one of those albums has really transcended time. That album, through from 1995 to now, I feel has gained so many listeners to the point where, when you think about songs like, I'll give you an example. Like I brought this up to somebody. Like when that movie Wayne's World came out, and they played Bohemian Rhapsody, when we heard that song, like I never heard that, and a lot of people, the younger audience, never heard it. But that movie, gave that song life again.
Yeah.
And I feel with they had the 10-year anniversary, they had the 20 and the 25, but I've physically have seen younger people, like my own family, other people, like younger people that have gravitated to that album. And it's something, it's hard to explain, man. There's just a rawness of that album that it's hard. It, like for me, I feel like it's just one of those albums, man, that 50 years from now, people are probably going to still be talking about, like, legitimately.
Man, no, you broke it down elegantly, man. And I think you bring up a good point about the bridging of the next generation. And don't forget social media.
That too.
Shout out to the Versus thing, which gave people like us hope again for our music and our generation, because even for the entertainers themselves, because it keeps them relevant.
Yeah.
And these are our oldies, bro. Like, no disrespect to Motown and, you know, some of these older performers and stuff, or, you know, if he was in the rock or so pop, jazz, whatever. This is our music. Like, you just basically painted a whole picture from your childhood. Because, you know, we gravitate to what we come up under.
Right.
And this is our music. There's now platforms. We can go on IG and watch Ghost and Ray. Because we didn't know these people back. Only time we knew Ghost and Ray was on interludes and skits, like in between albums. They rarely did interviews. There was no social media, so you didn't really know nothing about these dudes. Only thing you knew about them was, like you said, maybe they wrote an article in the Source magazine or something, and when they talk on the album, that's the only time you got a chance to really relate to these dudes. So going back to Cuban Links, what you said, it is, it's a pillar. It's one of the greatest albums ever put together. The concept with the purple tape, which Ray said he did it, and I didn't find this out till years later because I never knew why he did it, made the tape purple. He said he wanted to make it like the drug game. He wanted his bags to be purple, you know, to differentiate his product, which made it even pun intended, which made it even more doper. You feel me?
Right. That's crazy, man. It goes over people's heads.
It goes over people here, and the original, the concepts behind it all. The album, like you said, because back then singles was a big deal. So when I heard the album came out August 1st, I thought it was a misprint when I read it. I'm sorry. I'm like, there's no way this album came out August 1st. We was banging it all summer. But it wasn't that we was banging it. We was banging Glaciers of Ice and Criminology and what's my other joint? Heaven and Hell Remix, which...
That's already Scarface?
Which Incarcerated Scarface, my bad, and Incarcerated Scarface. You got three singles that you playing the whole time. And now, Heaven on Earth was on 36 Chambers, right?
You mean Heaven and Hell?
Heaven and Hell, I'm sorry.
That was on Cuban Links.
That was on Cuban. All right, I'm tripping. I'm mixing Heaven and Hell with Kenneth. So you understand.
They had the remix, though. Remember, they had the remix.
Can it be also simple? That was the introduction of Ghost and Ray. That's where I was trying.
That's a good point.
I always mix them two songs up for some reason. So when that song comes out, I'm moving out of state, knocking off a half a kick. You know, Ghost. They both killed it. You know, the verses is crazy on both of them songs. And that's the beginning. So you got Can It Be All So Simple, Timmy Remix, Incarcerated Scarface, Glaciers of Ice, right? Criminology. So that's like four or five songs right there before we get to the actual album. So all summer, we banging these songs. So by August 1st, now you get even more of a treat. Because this album is so well put together from production, the songs, the whole nine, the skits is crazy on there. When Ghost is just really having a normal conversation, but his energy is so crazy because he's New York to the, them dudes are New York. Anybody that knew New York dudes or grew up listening to New York, like they're New York to the 50th power, New York dudes.
Worse.
So the extra hype about everything, and you know, B's son, you know, it's just funny. But listening to Ghost yesterday talk about the album, he said he did that skit in the car, like he was just talking, so it wasn't a planned skit. He said he was in the car with Ray talking about Clarks. That's crazy. And here's the crazy part that I never knew. They wrote the album in Miami.
Right.
Did you hear them say that?
Yeah, man.
At the Flamingo Hotel. Is that hotel still around?
Nah, I don't think so, dude.
Yeah, probably not. We're going, you know, that it sounds old. You know?
Don't quote me. I have to check. That's a trivia question. I gotta go. Yeah, I gotta actually check that out.
Yeah, but anyway, they talked about how they wrote the album in this hotel, and Ghost and Ray don't know each other like we thought they did. And I learned that watching the Wu-Tang documentary, the little show on Hulu. Bro, didn't you think they were like best friends from third grade? Or did you know this already?
We all knew that there was a section of them that knew each other, right? From growing up. RZA knew, he knew GZA,
right?
His cousin.
That was ODB cousin, right?
But it was all I don't know if it was Rain. I don't think Rain Ghost came up together to that point.
They didn't. That's the thing. Like they were talking on the live, him and Ghost, the day of the reunion. He was just like, yo, like I always wanted to rhyme with, like I didn't know you, basically. And like as soon as we connected, you know, I was like, oh, this is a dude I want to connect. But they didn't know, like, point I'm trying to make is the chemistry was so crazy. You would have thought they've been rhyming together since like seventh grade. I mean, the chemistry was like they had the best chemistry outside of EPM, like in Prodigy and Mobb Deep.
Yeah,
like you know, two dudes that just belong together, right? The chemistry between them was so crazy. And then Ghost yesterday say, "This is stuff we're still learning about this album that we didn't know." He said he had more fun on Cuban Link than Iron Man, his own album. He said he was dealing with diabetes, which I didn't know he had. You know, he was just like, he was just in a real comfort space. They was 25 years old, having fun. It was at the height of their career. I think Cuban Link went like double platinum or something. You know, like I said, the energy, the delivery of the album and where I was at in my life, you know, speaking of how you said, you know, just getting in the cars, you know, just being a teenager, you know, we always talk about this, right? We say the 80s was the start of it all. It was a great era, but we were little kids in the 80s. So we wasn't out really partying, having fun. We had to be in a house by a certain time in the 80s. So the music hit different. You feel me? Like, so the 90s for us is like our 80s because we got Illmatic, 36 Chambers, you know, all Tribe albums, you know, obviously the infamous Cuban, you know, the list goes, Biggie, Jack, the list goes on of all these collection of great albums that came up during our adolescent years. So of course we're gonna gravitate to it a lot more. But long story short, man, we move on to the box, and I just wanted to, you know, pay homage and just be really appreciative of an era that I think we even take it for granted. Like I was just watching on Instagram, the whole East Coast, West Coast started in 95. Shook goes on the Source Awards. And do the infamous, and many producers don't want somebody dancing in their video, sign a Death Row. And they cut to Dre, right? He got the most uncomfortable look on his face when Suge does this. Because Dre was a producer at the end of the day. He was, you know, working with all types of artists, you know what I mean? But that started that. So it was a crazy year. This is one year, mind you, 95.
I mean, that's why I said that year. I mean,
it's nuts.
There's so many albums that came out that year, man, and it's just
even,
you know,
RuPaul's album, Roberto, RuPaul.
I was just gonna say that.
Production was nuts on that joint, crazy,
just unfiltered, man, like unadulterated hip hop, man. That's the best I can put it. And I made a comment yesterday, man. Like, and you touched on it. We love older music, you know, like I mentioned yesterday, man, like my favorite band of all time is Earth, Wind & Fire, right?
Right.
But for me, as much as I love their music, like I wasn't there in the 70s, in the early 70s, and experienced it like our folks did, like when those songs first came out. Like, and I feel like with us, we that Cuban Link is that for us. I mean, Midnight Marauders is that for us.
What did you say the other day when we were in our group chat? You said you mentioned something that was mentioned on an album. You say, see, you had to be there for that to even know what they're talking about.
All right, pardon my French, but basically, like, Ghost has his line, man, right? This speaks of the 90s. In Ice Cream, he has the line. He goes, I put Adina Howard to sleep. Your pardon, the be on my mind all week, but back to the... Okay.
That's
if you weren't from the 90s, you don't know who Adina Howard is, man.
Yeah, that's what
and,
it was.
And
yeah.
who she was at that particular time.
At that time, which was... And, she and was when Ghost said that,
I was like, yo...
She was Megan Thee Stallion, like Nicki, like all the chicks. Okay. She was that back then.
Right. Very good. Yeah. That's a good comparison. And it's things like that. And that's just one of other
that's
like lines that you had to be, you know, the whole tagline is you had to be there, you know? And I say that for, you know, my whole thing with Earth, Wind & Fire, I love them, but I don't have the same feel when those songs hit like my father does,
right?
Or like my aunt does,
yeah.
Or you know what I'm saying? It's, so it's kind of the same with us, and I feel like there is an appreciation level. And I have a 23 year old cousin who can recite you all of the main ingredient from P-Rock and CL, right? And he loves this album too, but he's in the same pocket as I am with Earth, Wind & Fire. Like, you had to be there. There's just certain things that when like that Ghost line that you're like, yo, because we all when Adina Howard came out, like the record came out, we all wanted to see the video. Like, remember it come up on Rap City, and it was what it was. You know what I'm saying? But it you know, so that's the thing, man. Like that album is just one of those albums that stood the test of time. I think you freeze up here. Hold up. You still there, Train? Hold up. Let me go here. All right, we're back. So yeah, man, that album, I think in general is just, like I said, one of those albums that's just gonna be an album we talk about until you know, there's no more hip hop, or even if there is still hip hop around here, man. It's just one of those pieces in time, man, that I think we're just gonna hold forever, man. So salute to the almighty Purple Tape, Cuban Link, only built for Cuban Links, man. So Train, you freeze up here. Let me try to bring you back here. Hold up. So yeah, so obviously we got some boxing to talk about, man. And Showtime has officially returned, and we didn't get a chance to really cover the whole widespread of fights that they unleashed. They made a huge announcement. I think really the big one that we were, you know, anticipating is the doubleheader with the Charlo brothers, Jermell facing Jason Rosario. Sergey Dervianchenko, man. So hold on one second here. Train, you there? So yeah, man. The Showtime card. Pardon the interruption, sorry. the Showtime cards, man. Listen, we in the midst of this pandemic, we've been waiting to see how boxing was going to come back to the forefront, you know. And, you know, the first series of fights were courtesy of Top Rank, ESPN. And we saw, basically, we've just been seeing showcases. That's all we've really been seeing. And we saw Shakur Stevenson. We've seen some other fights. I mean, we're waiting to see the deal with Vasily Lomachenko and Teofimo Lopez. I mean, at the 11th hour, it's looking like this fight might not even happen, you know. that's a whole nother story. But without question, the PBC have been the machine that have really, you know, rolled out the red carpet and have provided us on paper with some quality fights. And, you know, I mentioned the twins, and I think, again, that's one that I feel is a fight that we're all, or a series of fights that we're all looking forward to. And that one's going to be pay-per-view. Gervonta Davis, Leo Santa Cruz, that's going to be pay-per-view. And I'm trying to think of some other fights that they're, if I can go on the list here. But, you know, one of the fights that people are or were waiting to hear about that wasn't listed in the Showtime cards has been announced, I guess, officially, but I'll get to that in a second. But Errol Spence and Danny Garcia has officially been announced. I don't know how you determine formally or officially, but November 21st on paper seems as if Errol Spence versus Danny Garcia is going to take place on Fox pay-per-view for the WBC IBF welterweight titles. But again, I made mention of this not too long ago, but I think we really have to start talking about these fights in conjunction with, either, I don't want to say TBA, but subject to availability or subject to change. Why? Because we're still in a pandemic. And this past weekend, we saw Stephen Fulton Jr. was replaced in the Angelo Leo fight as he tested positive for the coronavirus. And, you know, the worry I think that people are having is whether it's the Charlo card, whether it's that particular card. And Fox, as we're doing the show today, Fox is supposed to, I believe this Saturday, they're supposed to roll out their red carpet as far as fights that they're going to be announcing. And, you know, we have to really look at this at a point where we may not get some of these fights till 2021 because of what's going on. We're seeing what's happening with other sports. We're seeing what's happening, obviously, particularly with Major League Baseball, where like half of these teams are testing positive. They're canceling games. The NBA is within a bubble, and it seems like they're doing all right, even though like we're probably going to see some positive tests too here and there, quarantined. But with boxing, and we've seen this, I've seen this with the UFC, some of these trainers and fighters have tested positive too, like at the 11th hour. So the one thing we'd hate to see happen is particularly a fight, like, or fights with that are on pay-per-view, you know, whether it's the Charlo cards or the Charlo's card. and then, you know, Danny Garcia and Errol Spence, you know, for people that are anticipating this fight, and I'll talk about it in a minute. I didn't think Train's going to come back in a second, but you know, I get boxing is doing the best they can to kind of, you know, stay afloat. And I think Al Haymon has been really the only, you know, outfit or the PBC that have put on quality cards or have rolled out the cards that look quality on paper. And we all are hoping these fights pan out, but I'm of the mindset that, you know, it's in the back of my head that there's a good probability these fights might get postponed, okay? Because none of us know what's going to happen in these next 2-3 months, man, as it concerns the pandemic. As far as we see, man, I mean, there's really no light at the end of the tunnel as it concerns the cases going down, man. I mean, again, and I'm not trying to make this a political thing at all, man. I mean, nothing at all. I'm talking about it from the perspective of these fights continuing without there being a postponement. And it's really a crapshoot at this point. I mean, I think the good thing is we're going to get them at some point. or so we hope. And, you know, we just kind of have to wait and see, man. I mean, the first, again, like I just said, the first fight that we were supposed to have on Showtime, it didn't get canceled. There was a fill-in, but Stephen Fulton Jr., a guy that, you know, we've been keeping our eye on at the 122-pound division. And, again, right before the fight, he tests positive. So we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But, listen, I think it's clear to say that Errol Spence versus Danny Garcia is one of the most anticipated fights, if not the, out of all the fights that have been listed by Showtime. Now, again, this is going to be a Fox pay-per-view, but we were supposed to get this fight last January. We all know what happened with Errol Spence, got in the horrific car accident, which, again, man, the fact that this guy is even competing in a high-level fight against somebody who, again, whatever opinions you have of Danny Garcia, he's not a tune-up, okay? And I think the intrigue with this fight, and again, I'm not going to give a prediction right away, but I think the intrigue with this fight is really based around the fact that this is Errol Spence's first fight since the car accident, that while he's, you know, no broken bones as far as arms, legs, and any other injuries outside of, I believe, what happened with his mouth or his face. And we didn't see him in the public for a while for obvious reasons, but he clearly had some type of oral surgery. I don't know what it consists of, but when you heard interviews with him post, I don't know, like 2 months after the accident, you heard it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you heard it. So, as of April, from this past April, he had not even sparred. He wasn't even sparring yet. Now, again, in the midst of the pandemic, I don't think anybody was doing anything at that particular time. But at this point, you have to think he is going to get some rounds in. And the curiosity that I have is really how he's going to respond to punches with 8-ounce gloves. He's going to be sparring with 16. He's going to have headgear. But going into the fight in January, had there not been an accident, okay, I feel Errol Spence was a huge favorite in that fight. That's not a shot at Danny Garcia at all, at all. Danny Garcia is a 2-division world champion and, you know, former undisputed 140-pound champion. But obviously, Errol Spence is a big boy. He's in his prime. He's, you know, he's undefeated. Had a difficult time with Sean Porter, as do most people. And while he hasn't had a knockout, you know, he didn't knock out Mikey Garcia. He didn't knock out Sean Porter. Some people are questioning maybe some are overrating his power. And I'm like, you know, I don't think he's still a guy you want to stand in front of. But this fight for Danny Garcia, I mean, if you really think about it, the pressure really isn't on Danny at all. I mean, think about it, man. I mean, Danny has had a really good career. He's made a lot of money. He's doing very well for himself. And this is what he said, his 10th world title fight. The pressure clearly is on Errol Spence because a lot of the eyeballs are really going to be on him. And the story of this fight isn't so much about Danny Garcia. We know what we have with Danny Garcia. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's not a guy you want to stand mid-range with. I think Errol Spence is somebody that's probably going to want to fight at a distance, though I think at times he's going to try to walk Danny down. Danny's not a very active guy. You know, he never has been. Sneaky counterpuncher. You know what I'm saying? Like, our ROD likes to term the Dracula punch, where that, you know, he knocked Amir Khan out with some time ago. But Danny's a guy that, you know, I forgot what publication printed it, but Danny is not a guy that most people have beaten very easily. You know, whether you're talking about Sean Porter or Keith Thurman, neither of those fights were like 8-4, 10, give or take, man. We're right there. You know, I have Porter and Keith beating him, but I don't think either fight was a whitewash. You have to really give Danny some credit. And the fact that, you know, some people were downing him, saying he was ducking Spence and everything. He, he was about to fight him last January. So, I mean, I really don't think it. I don't think Danny was trying to duck Errol Spence at all. This is a big opportunity for him. I mean, it's his toughest fight. I mean, out of Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, I mean, I think this is a tougher fight than either of those fights would be. Even though, again, you can argue Sean Porter's a workhorse, and he's, again, like I said, he's a tough fight for everybody. But like I said, this, I feel this fight is really the story of where Errol Spence is right now. I was somebody that was saying prior that I would have not been mad at all if he took a tune-up. Just to see where he was at. Really, physically. Mentally, that could come into play when he gets punched. You know what I'm saying? And it just adds to the intrigue of the fight. Danny hasn't had, or he hasn't knocked out elite level guys at 147. But again, he's not a guy you want to stand there in front of. So it's going to be really, this fight's going to be really interesting to see how the early rounds go. Because like I said, we want to see how Spence receives a punch. And if he's okay, and if his camp going into this fight already feel he's okay, then maybe he is, you know. And he's just incredibly blessed that he came out of that accident in one piece, you know. So November 21st, Errol Spence, Danny Garcia, and I'm going to say this one more time, subject to change because we don't know going in what's going to happen as far as anybody testing positive, whether it's trainers and handlers, whatever. So we have to kind of be on our P's and Q's about that. So Fox pay-per-view, and like I said, Fox is supposed to roll out their red carpet pretty soon with their series of fights. And I'm trying to think of like who Showtime announced that Fox, or who Showtime didn't announce for a series of fights that Fox is gonna put on. I mean, are they gonna announce Wilder Fury 3? You know. That's kind of gone kind of silent. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one that noticed that. So we'll have to wait and see, though. You know, we're literally in the beginning of August. We're starting to get into the Showtime cards. Fox will be back this Saturday PBC will return this Saturday with Thomas Delorme. And I believe Sean Porter's fighting at the end of the month or sometime this month. So boxing is back, man. But I mean, as far as the quality, it's clearly been the PBC. So salute to them. But this year's just been crazy, man. I mean, and before I forget, you know, they announced Anthony Joshua and Pulevi is going to happen in December, the beginning of December, as what Eddie Hearn announced. Eddie Hearn, I forgot where he's doing it, but like they have some backyard that they're doing this whole gala with, and I think they had a car this week. I mean, it's just so all over the place. So we'll have to wait and see, man. I mean, we're in August. November's a long ways away. And this applies to all the fights I just mentioned, man. Tank Davis, Leo Santa Cruz, subject to change. The Charlo fights, subject to change. You know, we just don't know. We don't know, man. So that's pretty much it, man. Again, boxing is back, so we're still waiting to see Canelo. Who's he going to fight? You know, he doesn't want to take a pay cut either. Terrence Crawford, when's he going to fight? He doesn't want to take a pay cut either. It's been a very... I can't even put into words what kind of year this has been, man. Just on a personal note. The concerns, you know, boxing in general, or the Fox cars, man, and their lineup going into December. So that is pretty much it. Follow us at Garage Girl Boxing on Instagram. We appreciate all the follows on Spotify, Facebook.com/GYG Boxing, man. Salute to my man Train. Again, salute to the almighty Cuban Lynx, 25 years old. And like we, you know, we start off the show, rest in peace. What am I saying? Brother Nazim. So we are out of here. And until next time, salute. Peace. Nazim Richards. I'm lost today, man. Salute. My apologies. I'm out of here. Peace.